You're listening to the Pete and Sebastian Show on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
This is the Pete and Sebastian Show with Pete Corielli and Sebastian Maniscalco.
You know what's been lost? I mean, we're like, what, 200 and something shows deep? You guys are blowing up. I mean, Petey and Biscuit are taking over the world. We got Showtime specials, sitcom deals, friggin' sitcom writing gigs, and traveling the country and all over the... But you know what's been forgotten? The fact that Petey is a fridge fucker. I mean, this shit hasn't been mentioned in I don't even know how long. The guy used to bang his fridge as an adolescent.
All right, due to the drunken and irresponsible nature of Jimmy from Boston's message, we're going to shut that one down. Whoa, somebody had a few too many Budweisers alone in the renovated basement tonight, huh? Shit. This reminds me of a story I once heard when I watched a documentary on Jaws. You know that guy with the English accent who tells the big speech about how the boat sank and they floated in the water for 3 days and three nights while the shark ate guys all around them? Well, the first day they came to do that taping, his character was supposed to be drunk, so he was shit-faced drunk and did the whole scene drunk, and it was an embarrassment. And they had to shut down the entire operation, wait till he sobered up, and came back the next day and played drunk but was sober and tore it up.
You know the thing about a shark? He's got lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's eyes.
Jimmy, what do you say we sleep it off, come back now, and leave a message not loaded with slander about my adolescence, guy? Share a secret with you once, you get loaded and fucking blabber. Step it up, guy. Welcome to the Pete and Sebastian Show. Jimmy, let's kick it off again. By the way, I'll tag his dumb message on at the end of the show, all right? I'm not that lame. You can hear it, but let's save it to the end when the kids are in bed.
Petey Biscuit, it's Jimmy from Boston. You two giving steam room advice, you sounding like two old hens sitting on one of those $10 Fung Wah buses on your way to stick dimes in some slot machines at the Indian casino. Listen, you're still in your prime, fellas. So unless Sinatra comes back from the grave and he asks you two Cinderellas to join his newly assembled Rat Pack, leave the steam to the old-timers. Later.
Look up here, I'm in heaven. I've got scars that can't be seen. I've got drama, can't be stolen. Everybody knows me now.
Pete and Sebastian, we're back, baby. Full burners, let's go. I need this hang, brother.
Oh, God. Man, it's been... First of all, I just got to jump in by saying, apparently, everybody agreed with you on the bag underneath the airport, on the airplane.
Yeah.
I got murdered on that, man.
Yeah, that was a no-brainer. I mean, come on. It'd be one thing if I was making the poor lady go to the carousel, but it was right at the end of the thing. So what are you going to do?
I don't know. I was just, I thought I'd have more people on board with Team Sebastian, but Team Pete pulled it out on Twitter and the Facebook. So applause to you.
No! That was terrible.
Were you in the city this past weekend?
I was there 5 days. Yeah, Thursday to Tuesday.
Dude, I was there Friday and Saturday.
Well, I wasn't. I was staying there. I was actually traveling to... Massachusetts, Philadelphia, you know, I just home-based it there.
Oh, whoa, man. There's different levels when you do stand-up. Like, at first, you stay wherever they put you up. Early on, guys do condos. I was fortunate enough, pretty much, probably you too. I didn't really middle much on the road. It was, like, just local city stuff and then eventually headlines. So not too many condos. Early on, how about
you? Yeah, no, I didn't do the condos. I mean, few. But I'm like you. I didn't do a lot of featuring.
Then you headline and you stay in the hotel that they give you. Then yes. You start doing better and you take their little buyout and you pick a hotel in town that you like best.
Yes.
Then you do even better and you start, like, if you're playing outside of Iowa, you're going to stay in Des Moines. Like, you play Des Moines Funny Bone. It's outside the city. You're going to stay in the city. That's even bigger. Then you play the East Coast and you just take New York City and that's home base. Pretty soon. You know what's next. There's only one level next. You know the next level. It's from your backyard, fucking taking off on a private jet like Seinfeld, back to the backyard.
Oh, God. No, listen, I was with Lana. We rented a car, and it was just easier logistically to just drive to New Jersey and drive back, drive to... By the way, we went to Camden, New Jersey. Have you ever heard of this place?
Yes, I have, man.
Oh,
I think it's the murder capital of the world.
It is, and we felt that it was palpable, man. When we left out of there, I didn't know it was coming in. I came in through a freeway, exited the ramp, and then I was basically at the venue. But leaving, I had to go through some side streets. And I tell you, man, that murder is in the air over there.
I think, like, if you sit outside for, like, 24 hours, would you hear a gunshot?
I think if you stayed outside for 10 minutes, you'd get killed.
Come on, man.
I'm not kidding, man. It's bad. It's like one of those places where you're driving in the car, and if you stop at a stoplight... and you catch the stoplight from the beginning, you're done.
I wonder if you could tell me how to get back on the expressway.
Hey, fuck your mama.
Thank you very much.
You got to keep moving in that city.
Windows up when you go through, too. I love that move. My father used to say, ooh, put the windows up. What are we at, safari? The fuck? They're not going to climb through the windows. Shit.
I never knew what the windows did. Like, if you put them up. What, are you all of a sudden safe from anything that happens outside the car?
That's what I'm saying. I think it's just symbolizing, you know, let's tighten up, eyes peeled. Let's find the highway out of here, man.
Yeah, I don't think a burglar or a thief looks at the car and goes to his buddy, nah, windows are up, leave them alone.
I gotta tell you, there's something about the ghetto. Luke, can we get the ghetto by Elvis right now? I've always felt comfortable walking through ghettos. In New York City, Baltimore, I've been through some. I never feel like there's going to be a situation. It's more of those hobunk towns in the middle of nowhere. One gas station, those are the ones. You know, the guys pulling up with the rednecks and the pickup, they frighten me much more than any ghetto situation might.
I don't know, man. Something about broken down buildings, condemned. It's just an eerie feeling. But yeah, we got the hell out of Camden, and thanks for the people that risking their lives that came to see the show. But I don't think you'll ever see me in Camden again.
You got to take a walk through Howard Beach. There's a different kind of scary if you're not Italian. If you're Italian, you're fine. But Howard Beach, bro.
Nah.
You'd be like Rocky jogging in Rocky 2. There's got to be... they might literally have shrines of you in Howard Beach.
Is Howard Beach near the airport, JFK?
Yes.
Oh, is that where that girl got murdered? Did you see that? The jogger?
Yes, that was where it was, you know?
An Italian area?
Oh my God! What are you kidding me, man? They got the little homes right on top of each other with just cement on some. If they see a piece of grass, they run out and slap cement on that shit. Who put that grass there? Get some cement over that shit right now. It is Italiano. I'm telling you, the lady that made you that blanket probably lives in Howard Beach.
I would assume so. The way you're describing it.
This will just make us appreciate what we have. Roll them up.
So I can't believe I didn't see you in New York City. I was hanging out late night, but I guess you weren't even back in by then.
No, yeah, I was coming in late. What were you at the Cellar?
I played the Cellar, and I played over at the Village on the Ground, the other one that the Cellar owns, doing a little back and forth. And so, small. Get to the point quick here with this, but who do I run into with Burnsy, Steve Burns, comedian Steve Burns, coming in. He was going on. He went on before me, and he stuck around to watch. Fucking Vince Vaughn. Yeah. So then we'll go over to the cellar to a spot, and they're up there, and Burn was really, really good to see him, man. He's doing well. It was, of course, talked about you, but he's like, sit down. So I sat down with Vaughn and Steve Burns for, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes. But I literally opened up with Vaughn right away by going, bro, I just got to say, I mean, the fucking level of laughter, crying, bro, crying. The Sharks, the thing with the Sharks, what movie was that? And he laughs and says the movie, and I go, yeah. And then, you know, come on with the fucking Wedding Crashes, and I go, not to mention the clown suit and Old School with the cigarette in your hand, the Heineken, telling the guy to fucking, you know, get his shit together, whatever. Oh, you better than that? You know, and I'm just like, I real quick go, just, I can't, I mean, just literally, bro, big, big, big fan, unbelievably hilarious. I'm almost done. I'll be done. I won't do this anymore, but just had to tell you, unbelievably great to meet you, bro. Okay. I go, we're all good. And then I just went into normalness. But I can't sit down with my top three movie star of all time and just act like, hey, dude, good to see you. So, did you try the falafel? Fuck that, bro. You are fucking awesome. Holy shit. And then we chatted, of course, about you. And, of course, you guys know each other so well. He's like, I think he's in the city tonight. I'm like, oh, God, they're that tight now. They're keeping tabs on when they're in town. but I don't know how he felt about this because, you know, Burns and I were talking about you, and the three of us were talking, and the music was kind of loud, but we're all talking. We're talking about kids. And by the way, Vince Vaughn, just what a nice guy. What a nice guy. So at one point, Burns says something about our podcast, and I was like, thanks. And then Vince goes, oh, you got a podcast with Sebastian? I go, yeah, I'm doing it for a few years now. And I go, man, I actually remember early on talking about you because I saw the Wild Wild West video, and I was busting his balls for a long time about crying on that when he was thanking everybody. Like, and I say it like that, like I'm laughing again. And nobody laughed with me. I'm like, oh, you sensitive Sallys. Can I have a big drum circle and cry with Sebastian? It's fucking ridiculous. But he's like, yeah. He just went right into, yeah, man, he's such a nice guy. How's he doing? I think he might be in the city tonight. Yeah,
so. Oh, yeah, he switched gears on you quick.
On the cry thing. He did not want to hang out with me, but he wasn't.
Oh, no, no, on the cry thing. Yeah, I think the cry thing is like a sentimental thing between the guys on the tour, and you were trying to come in on that.
Yeah. Not to mention, even if you're just a filmmaker documentary and you're making a documentary and a man starts crying, you're like, oh, this is gold.
I think they were saying that behind the camera. I think they were whispering and go, is that tears? Get a close up.
Oh, shit. I think Bernsie did say, oh, you know, it's funny because I think I heard him cry on something. I heard a clip somewhere of his thing at the Montreal. I go, yeah, on the cast. DJ Lou played a little of it.
But then this guy's crying in every city.
But he goes, but man, he is tearing it up, you know? So, all good. Yeah, big hellos from Steve Burns and, of course, Vince. I don't know, maybe he's sitting there with you having a beer.
No, you know, I was Ari Sandell there? Do you remember a name, guy named Ari? Or he must have been there.
Yes, yes, they introduced me to him.
Okay, yeah. So, I went out with him late on Monday night. I saw Ari. He was the director of the Vince Vaughn Wild West comedy show.
Oh, he was there too for the cry comment.
By the way, Vince Vaughn bald?
Yeah, but shaved.
He's bald.
Yeah, but I mean.
Yeah, for a movie.
Yes. So that's why the next day when I told some people I work with, I saw Vince Vaughn, my one guy right with goes, oh man, how cool is it to sit across from Vince Vaughn? I go, yeah, but he had a shaved head, so I didn't get the full Vince Vaughn effect, you know. I mean, I'm talking to a bald Vince Vaughn. What are we doing here?
Yeah, you felt like you were cheated out of the hair.
Yeah, that's like I finally get to go on a date with Ashley Judd and she's 6 months pregnant. What the fuck? Not that I want to sleep with her, but just, you know, I wanted to enjoy looking at you with a glass of wine. Yeah. Same thing with Vince Vaughn. I love the hair. I love the style. But still, man, one of my favorite movie stars. So cool.
And the fact is, I got 40 strangers out in my living room, and all I want to do is get some fucking sleep.
I don't know why you got to do it in front of the kid with the effing. All you got to do is say earmuffs to him. Earmuffs. They can say fuck, shit, bitch, whatever you want.
Cock, balls.
Okay, I'm just proving a point. You don't have to celebrate it, Frank.
How is it to get back up on stage?
Oh, God, like a glove, dude. I had a few new bits that I really loved getting out doing. Did I ever tell you about the Sadie test with her ass? When I put my hand down her ass?
No.
I didn't mention that on the cast.
But hand down her ass?
Yeah, I just brought it up on stage. I don't know why it came out, but I'm so glad it did. But not because I'm saying like how, you know, you try to teach your kids. And I go like, for example, with my daughter, we do this thing where we'll put our hand, me and Jackie will put our hand down her ass. And we train her that when we put our hand down her ass, I go, what do you do? And she yells really loud, no, no, mommy, daddy, I want mommy and daddy, right? So, you know, and we
Wait, I gotta...
It's a molestation test, bro. I gotta spell it out.
Yeah.
I'm teaching her that if you don't, if someone you don't know puts their hand down your ass like I'm doing right now.
Oh, okay. So this is this something you guys came up where you, did your parents do this to you?
No, it's my move. I came up with it. I really got freaked out that time you went online on our show, one of the earlier episodes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you go, I found the website that shows where there are people, at, you know, who've...
Yeah.
And you go, bro, your neighborhood's littered with them. Remember that? You go, yeah, okay, it's firing up all over. So I'm like, oh. And then I got the corner street. So I taught her that, like, if anyone puts their hand down their ass like this, what do you say? So once in a while, I'll go up to her, and whatever, she's watching TV or something, I'll stick my hand down her ass, and I go, what do you say? And she goes, no, get that out, mommy and daddy. You know, like that.
Oh, so, I never even heard of such a thing.
So I had an old friend from Sirius and stuff, used to film stuff with me, a really close friend who came out here to, he lives in Brooklyn, came out to Oyster Bay, and Sadie was here this summer, and we were by the pool and stuff, and she had her, whatever, coloring book or something, and I'm like, dude, I was telling him about the test, and I'm like, you gotta go up to her with a bathing suit, and just while she's watching, man. Because she met him like 4 hours earlier. You know, even though I was like, this is daddy's good friend, you know. So I'm off to the side, by around by the, he goes, guy, come on. I go, dude, just your fingers, just like the edge of the debating suit. Just start to wiggle, man. He's like, dude, you are fucked up. I go, come on. So he's just putting it like the three fingers halfway down to the knuckle as she's looking at a book. And he's like, and he's leaning over. He's like, what you reading this? What are you coloring this, eh? You know, and she's like, and she looks back. She's like, that tickles. And I come over. I go, no, mommy, daddy, no, no. I go, what do you mean tickles? I go, and that was my point. I go, it's just a big goddamn game to her. She doesn't know I really mean it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is with my great pleasure that I bring up to you to receive the Father of the Year Award.
Petey!
So oh, I told that God. To a guy at work. I was telling him the story, and he said, that's why in Germany, did you know this? Germans show their kids horror movies, really scary movies when they're 2 and 3, they show them right away so that when they get older, so then they'll know right away, like if a van pulls up, they won't get in the van because they saw a fucking movie at 2 years old where a guy got thrown in a van and murdered, gutted and shit. That's why German nursery rhymes are really fucking hardcore, like Hansel and Gretel and Big Bad Wolf, where they eat the grandma and shit to scare the shit out of the kids.
So are you going to switch the tactic to German now?
I don't know the next move, man, but that's my point. She thinks it's a big game, you know?
Yeah, I think we got to start showing Sadie some horror flicks or something, because the ass test apparently has not stuck.
It's not working. But it was good to be back on stage, man. Yes, felt good.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of child molestation, saw a pretty good, not great, but pretty good documentary on Netflix, Who Took Johnny? It's about a 12-year-old kid had a newspaper route, and they took him right off the street in 1982, and apparently he was put in the sex trade. So, yeah, it's a little disturbing to watch. But
do we get to talk to Johnny now? Is Johnny with us now?
Well, it's for those of you that want to watch it, just skip 15 seconds ahead here. No one knows where the hell Johnny is. He's 43 and hasn't come back home.
Oh, okay. Ooh, man. All right.
Shit. So, yeah, not good for Johnny. But that was my my viewing over the weekend. So you got back up on stage. I was up at Oddball Comedy Festival for 4 nights with... hanging out with Jeff Russ. You hang with Jeff Russ at all?
When I see him, I do. I've known him for years, but I haven't. I don't.
Yeah, he came up. He came up in the New York comedy scene, and we went out with him. Great guy. And
yeah.
I think he's like the nicest human beings I've ever met. And John Oliver was on the show. Didn't really hang with him. Just you know, exchange pleasantries. Jay Farrell, you know him, black guy out of New York. He's on SNL.
No of him, yeah. He was in the hotel I was at in Montreal when we were there.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, nice guys, you know, just getting to know guys that I typically wouldn't see otherwise. So we did some great shows out east, and I brought Lana. And I got to tell you, just props to Lana coming to these shows. I we mentioned it a little bit in the speech in Montreal, but this woman, to come and to drive and sit there and watch the show and then get back in the car, I go, it's like a saint.
Where was the show?
It was, one was in Jones Beach. You ever go to that amphitheater over there?
Yeah, dude, cool, man.
Yeah, we did one show there. We did that one in Camden. We did one.
Oh, is the one in Camden, it's got like a grassy hill, I think?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that is awesome, man. How do you like performing outside?
It didn't sound like it was going to be fantastic. You know, when I first did this last year, I'm like, outside, 10,000 people, comedy's not going to work. But, you know, a lot of these places have an awning or like a thing that covers the seating area, and then there's like the grass. So it's been great. The shows have been great. And I like the amphitheater, especially that Jones Beach. It's like literally right on the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it's really cool there, man. That's a really cool place to play. So you guys going to do the Red Rocks? I wouldn't be surprised if you do that.
Nah, I got canceled.
Oh, you were going to?
Yeah.
Damn, why did it get canceled?
I don't know. There's a string of shows that got canceled. Denver, Seattle, Portland, all those got canceled. So we got the week off this week, and we fire it back up next week in Texas and then end out here in California. So... that's
how much time you doing on those?
25 minutes.
Is it interesting for you, like, trying to, you know, get, because, you know, when you do over an hour, you know, you start a little slow, you have more ebb and flows, are you just like pow like coming?
Yeah, it's like doing a set at the Cellar, you know, and just kind of fast 15, 25 minutes, whatever the hell it is. But yeah, 25 minutes, you get enough where you can get into a little flow, but you give them a little taste and you get off. It's nice, and there's a bunch of different comedians on it, so everybody kind of gets to enjoy all these different styles. So, and then I was in Chicago before that. I went out with my father. Did I tell you the story? Did I tell you the dinner story?
No.
I went out with my dad and Lana and my dad's girlfriend. We went out to dinner. What was I going to tell? What happened here? I'm getting notes from my producer.
About your dad, stubborn, you don't cook?
Oh, yeah. My dad tells me I don't cook. We're sitting at the dinner table. This is where we're out, and he goes, you don't cook, though, right? I go, yeah, you know, I cook steak and cook fish and, you know, make eggs. Yeah, but that's not like cooking. I go, what the hell are you talking about? Like, you don't make recipes. Which brings me to my question. If you cook a steak and a side of broccoli, is that not considered cooking?
I mean, technically, yeah, you're cooking. I don't cook. I just make some eggs, and people tell me, well, that's far from cooking. But slapping a steak on, I barbecue, I'm sure you barbecue. It's not cooking. I know what your dad says. You got bowls out in front of you, pinch of salt, little of this, whisk that, let that sit, hit the oven with that. I mean, what do? Slap a steak on? Come on, guy.
I'm not saying, I follow recipes. Not every night.
Well, then why are you opening up with I make scrambled eggs, Dad? Then why'd you open up with eggs? Why didn't you tell him?
I'm just saying, on a day-to-day, I'm cooking eggs, I'm cooking steak, I'm cooking fish. But I'm not doing, you know, I mean, would the eggnog be considered a dish?
Nah, that's more in the baking pastry department, more of
okay.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's say tomorrow you were having a chef come over to your house who's a friend of yours, and just for, you know, fun, he said, why don't you, and Lana will help you, but I want you to prepare one of your favorite dishes, just whatever, if, you know, impress me, let's have fun with it. What's your go-to dish, or what would you make that, like, do you have anything like that where I'm going to make this blow, or would you have to find the recipe book and pick something that you never made before? What would you do?
I would have to go with picking out a recipe, maybe something they never made. However, though, and I know you just say it's a steak, but the way I do steak, it's an art form.
All right, we'll talk, and then that counts. Did you tell your dad that? How do you do steak? Oh, yeah, I think we talked about this. What is
it? I got it. It's up on that recipe I got. It's up on our Facebook page. I'm telling you, ever since I adopted this recipe about 2 years ago, every time we go out for steak, Lana looks across and goes, just, it doesn't compare. Doesn't compare. However, I have to mention, by the way, New York City is the best city in the world. I am sorry. I mean...
Oh, it's not even close.
Second. I mean, I can't get over it. We got home late, about midnight, and we were walking around Soho. I walked into this little Italian joint, and the guy greeted me with, come stai? I go, you open? He goes, no, we're not open. And yeah, there's still some people there sitting there at the bar, and there's some people sitting at the table. I go, you don't have a good place around here? We can get a late night bite. He goes, well, what are you looking for? I go, Italian, American, Greek, whatever. He goes, you know what? Sit at the bar. Okay, sit at the bar. Got us a couple glasses of wine. Brought out the full menu. You know, you walk into a place at 10 o'clock out here in L.A., they look at you with a frown. You know, like, what are you doing in here? We're done.
Yeah.
In New York, the guy's like, stay as long as you want. I live upstairs. Oh, we were practically in his living room.
Oh, man, there is no better city. Amen to that.
It is so unbelievably accessible. And the other night, the Monday night we went out, same thing, got home late, walked down the street 2-3 blocks, just snuck into a little restaurant, sat down, a little glass of wine. They brought out some bread and oil. My buddy Ari got a little appetizer, some eggplant, whatever he got. And, you know, 1:30, just, you know, talking. And then even Ari said, hey, are we keeping you here? Nah, stay as long as you want. You don't see that anywhere else.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, you do. But it just seems in New York City, it truly never stops. When I first lived in the city in the early 90s, The Upper East Side where I lived, after 4 o'clock, it was like quiet for a while, but it just seems now everywhere in the city, there's just always people hanging out. And what blows my mind the most when I would like go home late night from the Comedy Cellar or one of those places, I'd be walking past the restaurant, going to the subway or get a cab at like 2:30 in the morning. And I distinctly remember passing like a seafood joint and there are people on the patio eating clams on a half shell. Like, it's 4:30 in the afternoon. Like, I mean, I don't know what I expected to do. Take every bite going, I can't believe we could get these at 2:30. But I'm like, who's it? Not only is it not one couple, the whole area of people going at 2:30, they're all like, hey, let's go get some clams on a half shell. It's unbelievable. And you can get it.
And you can get it, man. It's outstanding.
Did you guys go down yet to the new Freedom Tower?
No, we didn't go and see the museum. There's a museum, I know, in the basement of that thing. We went to go see the fountain or the water feature that they have there a couple of years ago.
Reflecting pool, they call it, I believe. Yeah. I didn't see
that.
Yeah,
we saw that. We didn't see the museum. It was one of those things that I was in New York City for the first time this weekend over the September 11th thing, and it was everybody you talked to had a story about it, from the bellman to the cabbie to, you know, the person working at the department store. Everybody was recanting that day. Where were you? What were you doing? Were you in the city?
No, man. I was in Charlotte. I was on the road with Jim Brewer. We were in a hotel, and dude, man, my brother worked in the tower at the time. So I couldn't get a hold of him, and I was fucking freaking out. But the question I was going to ask since that came up there was, now my brother was in the first, the building that got hit second was his. So when the building that got hit first got hit, he's like, he's pretty high up, and he's like, a lot of people just stuck around. He just started playing, hit it, and he goes, I only went out because I wanted to see, you know, what happened. And he goes, and then when I'm standing there, I see the other plane go through my building. And he's like, it was like, I guess like 10 or 11 stories higher than my brother's office. So he only knew a few people that passed away that worked higher up. But, and he wouldn't have probably gotten hit because, like I said, it went 11 floors up. But as soon as he saw it, hit, and then he just ran, and, you know, that's it. And his wife worked nearby, so she had to get out of there too. Now, I was wondering, because I was in my apartment late night that night. I mean, in the afternoon, because that was Sunday. And like I said, you know, so many people obviously have these horrific stories. But my brother got out, and we got real, 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 real lucky. So I was wondering, should I still call him on that day and just say, hey, how you feeling? Or I didn't, but would you have? I mean, it'd be different if, like I said, there was massive tragedy, lost a... But just people that got out, do you still call them and go, I hope you're feeling all right today? I probably should have.
Yeah, I think that's probably a nice thing to do, especially you being the brother. And, you know, maybe September 11 brings back some bad memories for him. It'd be nice to give him a call, say, hey, man, been thinking about you, you know. And I mean, I don't know what he saw. Did he see people like, he didn't have to see any of this. He was there. But was it so bad where he saw the people falling out of the sky or...
He pretty much says to me that he came out, just saw the first building on fire, then heard the noise, looked up, saw his building get hit, and then he's like, I just started jogging and walking and walking. And we lived on 78th Street at the time, way, way uptown. He was almost all the way home when the tower got down. The other tower was still standing. So he was way far gone. He just turned and ran, like so many.
Wait, he walked home from the...
God, everybody did, dude. There was just gridlock. You couldn't go anywhere. People were abandoning cars, you know. They shut down everything because they didn't know what was under attack. So, you know, it's not like you could still grab the six to go up to Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
I remember when I got in, I finally got home like the day and a half later. And I come up through the train station, Penn Station. It was really hard to get home, obviously. And I come up and I got my bag. And I come out, and there's a taxi, and I go to get the taxi. And right before I get it, a guy in front of me grabs my taxi. And I go, yo, what the fuck, man? That's my taxi. Are you serious? And he turns to me, and he goes, you can have it. It's just, you know, like he was in grief. And I just gotten into the city. I just got out of Penn Station, and it hit me. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, we're not being assholes. I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. I just got back. You know, and then I gave him a half hug and gave him the cab, and I'm like looking around, and then I see candles lit on stoops. I'm like, oh man. So as much of a, I mean, we were all shocked and felt fucking unbelievably the worst ever in our lives, but when you're actually there, you're like, whoa, these people are like, they, you know, they're in it. So it woke me up instantly to get on our level, guy.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. I couldn't even imagine being there, seeing that stuff happen. I was trying to. I was sitting there running along the Hudson, actually where your father actually built the that little pathway, didn't he?
Yes, designed, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm looking up and going, wow, must have been crazy. I mean, I was in Los Angeles, 2001. I think my sister had woken me up and said, turn the TV on. I turned the TV on like so many people did. And the plane had hit the first building, and then I saw the plane hit the second building. And then they're saying it's a terrorist attack, right? So during all this, I still go to work. I was working at the mall selling the dishes out of the kiosk.
Yeah. Oh,
shit. So it's like I gotta be there at 10 o'clock to open up the kiosk. So I see all this happening. There's phone calls back and forth. Talking to my mom. He's, could you believe this? And I go, I gotta go to work. So I get in the car. I go to the mall. This is the mall that was in the ghetto.
Yeah.
I go to the mall. The entire mall. Nobody opened nothing. The only people that opened was me and the jewelry guy.
you thought you might sell a satellite dish on 9/11 when you don't even sell them on 9/10 or 9/9.
Yeah. I'm thinking, all right, you know, just like I didn't know any better. I'm like, I gotta go open the kiosk.
You are such a bulldog. That's the Sicilian in you. Your father's like, I don't give a fuck if half the city's being bombed. You go to work.
Oh, God.
Were you more like, oh, boy, what a yo-yo I am? Or were you like, what the? What if I wanted shoes? Are you kidding me? Let's get these stores open, people.
No, you know what? It was almost like, again, I just thought I got to open up the kiosk. Or, I don't know, I'll get fired or whatever the hell's going to happen to me. I got to go to work unless, you know, nobody called me, say, stay home. I just thought, you know, business as usual. I didn't know the scope of what was going on. Obviously, the two things, I just went to work. I went to work that night at the Four Seasons. Worked during the day after an hour. By the way, I shut the kiosk. Nobody was in the mall.
Yeah.
Nobody.
I mean, at that point, they probably thought you were goddamn Al-Qaeda. There's one guy in the mall, fucking get him.
By the way, I do remember this. On the way to the mall, I looked to my right, and there was a gas station. I was at a stoplight. Gas, 87 octane, on September 11th in L.A., 99 cents a gallon. Can you believe it?
Wow.
99 cents a gallon. Anyway, I went, I closed it up after an hour, but I still had to go to the hotel and wait tables because we had a full hotel. There was no flights into New York City. Everything was shut down. So I had to wait on people on 9/11. There was a lot of hostility. One guy got upset that his hot tea wasn't hot enough. And he's like, this ain't hot enough. But I go, people died today.
I'm sorry, man. I'm not being disrespectful, no, of course, no, to the people, no. But I hear you.
No, as a waiter, you got away with that on 9/11 because everybody was all hopped up, you know?
Yeah, I know. I got that message when I got into that cab. I hear you.
Yeah.
So what was I going to say? Did you fly anytime soon after 9/11? Like, did you happen to be flying?
September, October, November. I think I went home for Thanksgiving in November that year. I do remember that. And, I mean, the planes were empty. I mean, empty.
Yeah, I remember. I flew, like, man, damn near first or second day you could fly again. And it was so trippy, man. If anyone got up to go to the bathroom, you were just like, where the fuck are you going, guy?
Oh, yeah.
Who are you? You know? And now we're getting, yeah, well, now we're getting off our game with that again.
Petey Biscuit, it's Jimmy from Boston. Pete, an old lady asked you to put her bag by your feet for a 45-minute flight, and you say no? What's next? Stealing candy from Sadie and her friends on Halloween? What's going on with you, Ted? We knew you'd come to your senses, though, and call her to apologize, but you didn't want the fans to hear it on the cast? We recovered it, so stay tuned for that conversation.
Beep. Yes, hi, this is Pete Corielli calling. Can I please speak to Doris? Hi, Doris. Look, I got your number from the airline. I was on your flight from Buffalo to JFK the other day, and, excuse me, just, can you hold on 1 second? Yeah, Lofty. Lofty, you can leave that line in the script, guy. It's going to kill, baby. It's going to kill. Yeah, right. You can, as you can hear, I'm at the office right now, but I just wanted to let you know that cooler heads prevailed. Sebastian and the fans got to me. They made me realize that I was wrong for not letting you put your bag by my feet. And yeah, you know, I don't know what was wrong with me that day. I was getting a little bit of a Hillary vibe from you, and it was throwing me off. You know what? It doesn't even matter. Forget I said that. I just wanted to call and apologize. Doris, that's physically impossible, dear. Why, you got some mouth for an old lady. Look, we paid the same amount for our tickets, all right? Oh, fuck myself? You know what? I'm glad they made you check the bag. Lou, when you get around to this, just do me a favor. Make sure this comes nowhere near the cast, all right? Shut it down. Shut it down.
All right, you ever take a shower and your underarm deodorant clumps up in like balls in your hair? You ever have that? Do you use that kind or you always use spray?
I don't use deodorant.
What do you mean? What do you do?
I don't smell.
You don't have body odor like a cab driver or nothing?
No. It's amazing.
Now, it might be mistaken.
No. It's been proven. I don't smell.
I'm blown away. How do I... Bro, this is huge. This is bigger news than your ballet feet. Your size 9s or whatever we're talking. I never knew this. Let's understand this correctly. So are we talking if you're outside on a hot August day from 6 in the morning doing blue-collar work? Well, no, we're not talking regular sweat. So 6 in the morning, you're out all day... Room temperature, maybe in an office, have a little dinner, get to 11, 12 o'clock at night, you're sitting on the couch. If someone's right next to you, they won't smell a little tad of BO, not even at the tail end of a long day.
No, they won't even smell it if I worked out and went for a hike. I don't smell.
So, like, if you soaked, sweating... And then just took your clothes off, dried your body with a towel, put something else on. No one would know that happened.
Correct.
Has a doctor proven this? I don't even understand this. Is this a real thing?
I don't smell. I mean, it's just, no one has to prove it. No one's, A, told me I've ever smelled. I used to wear deodorant. But it actually stained my clothing. Because I do sweat out of my armpits, definitely. And it used to kind of stain the clothes. You know, it used to have like, I don't know what it was, but I couldn't get it out of my armpits. It was almost like that. You ever get those armpit circles in the clothing?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, well, a lot of that's salt, which is your perspiration, but it's coupled with the fact that you have these cakes underneath your armpits and it's staining the clothing. So I stopped wearing it. But I never smelled, ever. I've never smelled BO. Lana could attest to that. I don't smell.
Lana could attest to that?
Yeah. I have to say this. Let me preface it, though. If I go through a day like that, and I don't shower, let's say, which is rare. But let's say if I went to bed and I didn't take a shower. And I did a lot of activity that day. And I got up the next day, went through a full other day. Maybe the second night, we'd start to smell a little. You know, the armpits would be kicking a little bit. But right. Nothing bad.
All right. You say even a fresh towel is going to smell just sitting there after long enough time.
But like, I could do a full workout. Leave that workout. There's no body odor coming off my body.
So, like, if you were in Top Gun, you played volleyball, and you went to pick up the chick on the motorcycle at a house, you don't even need to use her shower.
No, not at all.
Wow. Wow, man, I don't know. I mean, it's a gift I can't test. It's a bullshit. I can't test it because I never sniff you. But, I can't go by Lana because, you know, maybe she just has her nose don't sense it, you know? I mean, I know someone in particular that doesn't have good breath, and it blows my mind that their particular other hasn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think they're immune to it. So, you know, maybe this is that situation. I've never smelled you. You never smelled in my presence, but I just assume that's because you use deodorant.
No, I don't use deodorant. But get to your point about... I have used it before. I've used sprays. I used it all.
All right. Well, that's an incredible story right there. But anyway, when you use the basic rub-on, like Armorall, Arm & Hammer, whatever, or Dial, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So when I shower, and, you know, sometimes you'll go to wash your underpits, and you have, like, clumps from the previous deodorant.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, do you pick all that out every time you shower, or just do a rinse? Whatever stays in there, you just add on to when you get out and you put more deodorant on. Or do you pick it all out?
I don't know if you're a chimpanzee or what the hell's going on underneath your armpits, but I've never been picking deodorant out of my armpits.
White, like Speed deodorant, right? One of those, like a white one, you know? Not the liquid ball, just the white rub thing.
I used to put... How much you putting on? I used to do swab. What are you putting, like cake underneath your armpit?
I do a three count. I go down, that's one. I go back across the armpit again, that's two. And then down across the pit again, so three. One, two, three.
Okay, so you got like a white chalk type of deodorant.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, it pinches the hair when it goes on. Then when you put the cap on it, your armpit hair is still on the tip of the deodorant when you put it back in the medicine cap. That's why you ever go to, like, you're in a bind and the guy's got deodorant, unless it's a spray. I ain't throwing armpit to armpit guy, you know?
I used to like the clear one that you rub on because you didn't get that cakiness. And I also like the white guard.
Yeah, but it's wet. It's wet, that one. I have to flap like a goddamn duck to dry my underarms before I can put a shirt on. Don't you feel?
That's why I kind of abandoned the whole deodorant thing. Number one, I didn't smell. And number two, it's a messy thing, man. It's messy. I don't see how deodorant is something that you wear and not... it just doesn't work well.
Well, you could do the spray. I don't know that the aerosol spray is good for the environment, you know, and all that. I prefer to rub on, but I've gone without deodorant, and then I've gotten on the subway, and like by the time I'm downtown, I got my arm up, and I'm like, oh goddamn, my brother, he told me a story one time. He had a business meeting, he forgot deodorant. Bopped over to a 7-Eleven, walked in, just did a couple quick sprays from the spray one they had. He, like, unbuttoned his shirt when no one was looking, just popped the spray under each arm, put that shit back on the shelf. I mean, but it's to go without it. That's unheard of, man.
But no, I don't know. I just, it's one of those things that I never really did and never really had to do. I mean, I just asked Lana here. She's in the other room. I go, do I smell? She goes, no, not really. Just every once in a while, you got bad breath.
Yeah. All right.
Do you floss, by the way?
Oh God, all the time, bro.
Yeah.
Do you?
Do you think the people that have bad breath is what they're eating or a lack of them taking care of their mouth?
Yeah, you know, one person we knew back in the city who had bad breath, and Jackie would always say because he doesn't drink water, he's always just drinking coffee, and that's going to happen to you, guy. You have to drink water, too. So sometimes it's lack of drinking. But I find, no, the people I know with bad breath have, you know, relatively nice teeth, and they're groomed people.
Yeah.
Do you think it's hereditary?
Could be hereditary. I think it could be internal. I think it could be alcohol.
Well, yeah, in the morning. I do think we have a problem in this country in that we feel, by the way, I'm on my third beer. I hope that's not a problem if I'm babbling. But we have a problem with feeling it's wrong to tell somebody when they have bad breath. Instead, we back away from them. We think less of them. Don't you right away with those bad breath? You feel like, okay, guy.
Yeah, no, the whole thing changes with me if I smell somebody that's got bad breath. It's just a disappointing smell.
Now, I do this once in a blue moon. I did it. I actually did it last week, I think, at the Comedy Cellar. I was outside. The guy I was talking to wasn't acting weird towards me or anything, but it'd been a long night, and I had coffee. And I look over at him and I go, by the way, bro, if I have bad breath, just let me know, right? You know? And he's like, no, whatever, you're fine. Like that. Now, if someone said that to you, would you go, you actually do, bro. You should back up or get a mint. Or would you just say, no, you're fine, and lie?
If I smelled it and they said something, I'd go, yeah, man, it's pretty bad. I'd say it.
That makes me not like you, but it's also what you should do. I like you for doing that, but when you hear it out loud, you're like, fuck, man.
Yeah, but it's better to say it, especially if they offer it up to you, than to keep silent. Because especially if you're going to be talking to them the rest of the night, forget it. I mean, if somebody has bad breath, I lose complete respect. It's a turnoff. Have you ever smelled the same breath come out of two people? Like the same stench?
What do you mean? Like if you and, let's say hypothetically, Lana both, you know, I smelled your breath and neither of you had a mint or anything. It was just straight up what your breath would feel like that day. What are you saying? Would there be a difference? What are you asking me?
Lana and I are too similar. It would be, you talk to me, my breath smelled. You get on an airplane, total stranger starts talking to you. That guy's breath smells exactly like mine. Have you ever had this happen to you?
I'm going to say yes once. It's really sad to say. I can't say who, but I've had someone's breath smell a particular way.
Yeah.
More than once. And then there's been times, a couple of times, where I smelled that same breath on a dog.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I never even heard of that.
A neighbor who used to live in my building, yeah.
The periodontal disease breath.
Yeah.
It has the same stench with other people. It's just, it's very distinctive.
And some dogs.
And some dogs, apparently, have this disease.
Yeah, I don't know. Could you ever just get, like, somehow go to a guy and just say, if you have a gum disease rant, just go to a doctor and be like, just absolutely blast me. Get out everything that smells and replace it with spearmint gum. Like, I don't know. Like an overall wash. Like if you had a sleeping bag and two skunks went in there, healthy, best skunks out there, and they just gave everything, all their might, into that sleeping bag, two of them. Could you ever truly get the skunk smell out? Because if you can, that's the doctor these people need to go to. You know what I'm saying? Shit.
Well, yeah, I think what has to happen is each of their teeth have to be removed. And they, like you said, do like a blast up the gums and then put the teeth back in again.
Yeah, like, with the teeth. We're going to take the teeth to a separate warehouse, do special work on the teeth while we got another team blasting the gums. So you're going to be so blown away by the gum work, then all of a sudden the teeth are going to be brought back. You know, it's just going to be mind-blowing. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think the teeth stink? Like, if you took your tooth out of your mouth and smelled it, do you think that stinks?
Oh, it has to. I mean, that'd be like a sock in the sleeping bag when the skunk hit the bag. But seriously, you know damn well when you floss, it's devastating, the smell of your floss. It's right? It's
devastating.
It's easily top five worst smells you've ever smelled, right? No, I'm serious. Would you agree? No.
I agree, but what I'm saying is that smell lives in there.
That it's on the tooth. It's on the tip of the tooth that's touching the gum.
Keep on smiling. Cause when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Hello, I'm DJ Lou, and this is a show within a show. Today's show within a show is brought to you by Quick Snaps, a comedy show about NFL football available on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Quick Snaps had Sebastian on as a guest last year before the NFL season began, and they asked him for a prediction on the record of his beloved Chicago Bears.
I thought I'd come in here and get the lowdown on the sports vibe.
Yeah, you're from Chicago. Are you you're a Bears fan,
big
right?
Big Bears fan. Yeah. Going into the season with high hopes.
Are you?
With the new coach, and we'll see what happens. But
we're Falcons and Giants fans, and we were just predicting about 10-6 for our teams, kind of a hopeful but not implausible prediction for our teams. What do you got for your Bears?
I'm going 12-4.
Wow.
What?
That's strong, man. That's strong.
Are we talking about the same team?
That new juice.
The Bears finished a miserable 6-10 last year. Good work. So anyway, if you like comedy and you like football, check out my friends, Aaron Hodges and Kostaki Economopoulos. It's called Quick Snaps. It's like an audio version of The Butt Fumble. It's a Mark Sanchez reference from New York City years ago. Now back to the Pete and Sebastian show. So I met this guy, a photographer, over the weekend who was doing some photos for the Oddball Fest. And this guy's a major, major photographer.
Yeah.
And he told me a story that he used to shoot Michael Jackson.
Wow. Holy shit.
So I asked him, I said, do you ever have any encounters with... He goes, oh, yeah, all the time. Great guy. And he actually shot Bubbles, the chimpanzee. Remember Bubbles?
Oh, yeah. Michael Jackson. Yeah. I mean, I remember that he had a chimpanzee.
Yeah, he had a chimp.
Wasn't it? You literally said it to me like, I guess all Michael Jackson fans remember about the chimp, right?
If you ask, again, I'm going to go out on a limb, 99 out of 100 people, who Bubbles the chimpanzee, they'd say it's Michael Jackson's chimp.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and if you ask 99 people and said, what was the name of Michael Jackson's chimpanzee, most of them would say, I didn't even know he had one particular one, and I have no idea what the name is.
All right, I probably will lose this bet too, but in my world... Everybody knew who Bubbles was. So this,
I'm sorry. You're
so this guy spends the day with Bubbles doing photos with Bubbles. So there's like a handler there. It's Bubbles and the photographer. So the handler takes Bubbles and the photographer into a room and they shut the door. And the handler says to the photographer, what you're going to see in here can't leave the room. And the photographer says, yeah, no problem. Handler calls Michael Jackson on the phone. The handler hands the phone to the chimpanzee.
Yeah.
And Michael Jackson starts talking to the chimpanzee over the phone. And the chimpanzee's going ape shit. He's going, wah! And I'm thinking to myself, holy, the chimpanzee's a fan. I mean, do you know how popular you gotta be and talented that the chimpanzee can't even control himself talking to Michael Jackson?
Well, I guess is that just like a... But the chimpanzee... doesn't know. It knows it's Michael, but it doesn't, like, I mean, I've had great shows at the Comedy Cellar. I come home a little drunk, and I look at my dog, and I'm like, I killed tonight. and my dog has just looked at me like I got a piss. It didn't know tonight I have, let alone the monkey didn't know it was legendary Michael Jackson, but you could just tell by the voice that's my guy, huh?
Yeah, I would have to think the chimpanzee has been to concerts, seen Michael Jackson dance, and was in awe of the guy.
So I love it. Even the chimpanzee knows this guy.
It'd be like your dog watching you on stage, and then you come home, and the dog has a completely different reaction to you now that he's seen what you do. I mean, do you think that's possible?
First of all, not based on my accomplishments. But second of all, I didn't think an animal could have the wherewithal, but if any animal could have that kind of wherewithal, it would be a chimp. And if any human being was huge enough to have a chimp be able to tell they're in the presence of a legend, it would be Michael Jackson.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying when Michael Jackson got the chimpanzee as a pet, right? The chimpanzee obviously probably doesn't know who Michael Jackson is right off the bat. But then he takes him to Munich, Germany. And the chimpanzee in the back is peeling a banana. And Jackson pops out of the stage and starts doing the moonwalk. You don't think the chimpanzee goes, holy, this is my owner?
This is my guy? Oh, shit.
I don't know, man. But I found that story fascinating.
Wow, man. That guy must have a zillion unbelievable stories.
I know. I would have loved to have a cup of coffee with this guy and pick his brain. This guy shot everybody. Prince. The whole thing. So, good talking to him.
You know what's been lost? I mean, we're like, 200 and something shows deep. You guys are blowing up. I mean, Petey and Biscuit are taking over the world. We got Showtime specials, sitcom deals, friggin' sitcom writing gigs, and traveling the country and all over the... But you know what's been forgotten? The fact that Petey is a fridge fucker. I mean, this shit hasn't been mentioned in I don't even know how long. The guy used to bang his fridge as an adolescent, and here that shit hasn't been mentioned in forever. And now we got all these new listeners who have no idea. Every time they hear Petey, they don't even know. The guy's a fridge fucker. Listen, he has to tell the story again, people. I am putting and sending this message out into the universe and to you, so that Petey will tell that story again. You have to hear it. The guy has no shame. He fucks fridges. You'll hear it. Tell him, Petey. Tell him. Later.
All right, Netflix. We both have it, right? You have Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Have you caught this Tony Robbins? I only watched maybe the first 30 minutes, but the first 5 minutes, I literally recorded it on my phone. I was going to play it to you, but it's great. We'll play it. I'll have Lou play it while we talk about it, but you saw it, so I don't have to. With the German guy right out of the gate with the red sneakers.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That was fucking awesome. All right, we've all known Tony Robbins for years, okay? And before Lou plays any of the clip, there's so many layers to it, right? So first of all, so Tony, bro, weren't you blown away by the F-bombs?
Oh, yeah. That's out of the gate, man.
That's what I wasn't expecting. That's why I was like, that's what drew me in. I'm like, what? And then the way he gets really close to you, were you thinking this, by the end of it, when they're holding the guy up and shit, I'm like, this is such a fucking scam. Right? Did you feel that at all? And he's waving to Tony while... All right, I got to explain to the listeners, and we're going to play clips from it, all right? Please, interrupt me at any moment. Your take? I know you, because you went to something, you know, an embetterment sort of a thing.
Yeah, I did, but it was much smaller, a little bit more intimate. This was, 3,000 people in a room, And I felt like in the beginning when he's talking to the German guy, didn't you feel a sense of like, if that was you, wouldn't you be going, guy, enough, we know, the cameras are on. Or did you think this was like mesmerizing?
Oh, no, I definitely, there's a reason why they picked that clip to open the whole damn movie with. I think when it was happening, it was like when you were crying when they were making Wild West. They were like, we'll get gold right here. Keep it rolling. Now, I would imagine Tony curses though like that all the time, right? That part wasn't a one-time thing. That's what initially.
No, but, yeah, he definitely curses. I'm just saying the guy, wasn't the guy suicidal?
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring that part up. Oh, yeah, he was. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he said, okay, yeah. So the guy who claims suicidal. Right. But then Tony Robbins talking to him, and then by the end of it, the guy looks like he wants to open up a business.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, first of all, suicidal, I understand it's a horrible thing, but most of the people, this guy included, from my street look-in, a lost guy, misdirected, lonely, needs some help. Tony comes in with the goddamn cordless mic dangling down, looking lightly tan, but not too tan, completely in shape, leans over, is like, yeah, you got 4,500 alleys? You're going to be getting laid in the parking lot on the way out when I'm done with you, guy. I mean, come on. I could have got a $20 bill off that guy in 10 minutes. You know what I'm saying? So the guy starts going and he speaks broken English and German and he's saying, I feel lonely and stuff or whatever he's saying, you know? And the guy, and we're going to play some of the clips, he's wearing red sneakers.
What makes you hate yourself? Is it the red shoes?
What?
Is it the red shoes?
No.
Are you sure? Because they're fucking red. Don't you be smiling like that. You fuck everything up. If you smile like that too much, you don't want to stick around. You've been so hard on yourself. I love that you have such high standards. But those aren't high standards. That's called perfection. And most people overestimate what they can do in a year. And they underestimate what they can do in two or three decades. And you haven't been around long enough to have those extra two or three decades. So don't fuck it up. There's time.
I was totally into everything he was doing. Like, you know, from a distance. I'm not like saying I'm using Tony Robbins, what he's saying, and I'm going to go and betterment myself. But I'm like, wow, I like this guy's vibe. I thought he was a meatball, but he gets in your face. He's dropping F-bombs. Tell him, Tony, get your shit together. Let's go. You can do it. Empower yourself. And then, bro, he's at the end of it with the guy. And this part you won't be able to understand on the tape. You'll just hear it. At one point, it's all done. He has funny moments with the guy. He makes him feel better. There's nothing else. Where do we go with this? He looks at the guy, and he goes, whoa, what was that? Did you see that? Did you hear when he did that part?
Yeah, go ahead.
And he goes, whoa, what was that? And I'm going, what was what fucking? Nothing, Tony, nothing. And he goes, and then he puts his hands on the guy's shoulders, and he goes, did you see the way your shoulders just came down like that? And then he touches the guy's chest, and he goes, and the way your chest just came out, what was that? What was that? What was that? What was happening? And the guy's like, I'm just feeling better. And then before the guy could say another word, he goes in and hugs him while the lady raises the fucking music and the place goes nuts, right?
I'm telling you the truth. You just fucking begun and you're not gonna fuck it up. There you go. Did you feel that?
Yes.
What was that that just happened? What just happened there when these came down like that? And you started breathing here too?
Start believing you and be open.
Like, watch this. Watch this. Lou, let's pick a tune here, for example. If I just said to Sebastian, bro, your friendships meant a lot to me, and there's a lot of times I finished doing this show with you, and it inspires me to go on and do other stuff, man. You really kind of pumped me up there. What's that, right? You're feeling nothing off of that, right, Sebastian? Now, Lou, I'm going to say the same thing. Come in lightly with some really good music. Maybe some... You pick it, Lou. I just...
I just want to say, man, you know, doing these shows with you, you really inspire me, and I leave here enlightened and just wanting to do better stuff, man. You just make me feel that way.
Yeah. No, my chest is out.
So what was your take on the end of that? Were you like, this is total horseshit, or were you like, it was... Because I know you don't want to shit on that stuff in general, and I'm not either. I just thought that moment was a little scammy. What do you think?
Well, to be honest with you, as you were describing the story, when he said that to him, go, whoa, what was that? What was that? I actually got off the couch and walked closer to the TV.
Yeah.
And I told Lana, I go, rewind it. I think we missed something.
Yeah, I did that twice. There was no... Did you see a shoulder drop?
I didn't see nothing. That's why I had to, like, I told Lana, rewind the damn thing. I think we missed a shoulder and a chest puff. And it was like I was dissecting football footage.
I'm fucking, when you see these people, you'll laugh. Did you, in the rewind, see a shoulder drop? Because I gotta be honest, I didn't see one, man.
I didn't either. I didn't either, man. I was like, oh, my God, this guy got just $4,000 siphoned right out of his pocket.
So they all give him, so Tony hugs him, and that music goes up, and then Tony slowly walks off, and then the other people around the guy, they all go up, and they start hugging him. Total strangers. Now, yeah. The music is still blaring. This messed, wonderful, lovely music is, and all these people he doesn't know that also paid $4,000. They're all hugging him and holding him, and then they pick him up, and they hold him up, and they're doing a crowd surf with him. And the guy is so happy; it's a dream. He can't believe, right, bro? And while they're holding him up there, and he's so happy. He looks over with his free hand and waves to Tony. Tony stops and does a half turn and just waves back like, yeah, go get him, Tiger. Meanwhile, that guy was crying in a fucking vestibule on 2nd Avenue and 23rd, 20 minutes after that fucking thing ended. $4,000 lighter. $4,000 lighter.
Oh, my God. So did you watch the whole thing?
Nah, I tapped out. I would go back to it. I really would, but I tapped out about 25 minutes in, right after we saw the lead up where he gets out of the car and all that. I think, do you do it like that performing wise now? He literally gets out of the car, goes through the back way, and hits the stage.
Well, yeah, I was actually going to mention that to you if you saw that part in the documentary. He pulls up with like a caravan of SUVs. And as he's in the car, he's kind of going over what he's going to say with his assistants. He gets out. He's got a guy right there with the headpiece. He, like, slips into the headpiece as he's walking.
Yeah.
And then he's pacing back and forth. Dave's got a small trampoline. Did you catch that?
Yeah. What the? Holy shit. Just getting the blood going. Tony Robbins, baby.
Oh, seeing the trampoline, I call my agent. I go, I need a trampoline right before I go on stage. That looks so fun.
There must be some too that they say Tom Cruise jumps rope right before every scene, man.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, these guys, I'm telling you, when I see Tony Robbins, my first thought is this is Tom Cruise. And that great movie, Magnolia or something, Tom Cruise was in. It was an ensemble piece. You ever see that movie where at the end of it, it rains frogs?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen it.
Such a great movie. Tom Cruise plays like a sex guru. He's got a little man bun, and he's in the prime of his good looks.
Yeah.
And he, I feel like that role was more Tom Cruise than anything else. He's just, yeah, you got to live life, man. If you're not going forward, you're going backwards, you know?
Respect the cock. Yo, I'm betting this thought. I am the one who's in charge. I am the one who says yes. No. Now. Here.
And him and Tony, that's how they are. By the way, bro,
if this is when Tony Robbins, right? I'm going to repeat it because it was already said, but if you know one thing about me, huh? If you know me, then you know I don't bullshit. Remember when he said that shit? Now listen though, he helped like the Pope, I think, but like literally like incredibly high people.
Yeah, this guy, yeah, he's world renowned, man.
Now, do you think if you and I hung out with Tony, like came to a place where we were, and he's like, just give me a whole day with them, we'll have lunch, we're going to take care of it, we're going to stay holed up in a banquet room of a hotel. I know these guys are having fun with me on the cast, but if they're going to take it serious, I'm going to take it serious. Do you think we'd walk out by the end of that thing just like ready to take on the world?
I think, knowing you and knowing myself, I think I would be a little bit more open to that type of thing, where you would, let's say we spent 8 hours with him, and at lunchtime you'd call me over and you'd go, is this affecting you at all?
Yeah.
And I might be drinking the Kool-Aid by like 1:30.
I literally, as I'm trying to say it to you, my head is bobbing up and down because you just borrowed Tony's trampoline while he went to the restroom.
I could see Tony telling me, listen, if you do trampoline, if you bounce up and down for 10 minutes before you go on stage, it's been proven that you're 35 to 40% funnier. I'd go, yeah? And you'd probably go, guy, come on, man.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd buy it, man. By the way, I mentioned something about Tony Robbins again in the writer's room. And Bruce Helford, who I mentioned before, people don't know, he created a lot of shows. He's the showrunner of the Kevin Can Wait show here that I'm on, writing for. He co-created with Drew Carey the Drew Carey show, and he show ran it. So him and Drew Carey go way back. And Drew Carey apparently was into Tony Robbins, a fan. And they went to some Tony Robbins event where you pay that money and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And Tony was busting out right afterwards, but because he's Drew Carey, they gave him like, oh, it's a quick second to say hi to Tony. And Drew Carey goes up to him and says, I know you're super busy and you gotta go, but I just gotta say, if you could just give me one piece of advice about life, what would it be? Just one quick piece of advice. And Tony turned, he has to go, and he looks back at him, and Tony Robbins said, quit caffeine. Right there, guy. I drink more coffee than anyone. This guy's a fucking witchcraft guy. The fuck? Quit caffeine. What are you talking about? Italy would shut down, Tony. You gonna go to Italy and say that shit? So, you know, what do you do? Man. Now, if Tony said that to you, you're going to go, Lana, cut the caffeine. We're going tea. Well, no, we just can't do tea.
I cut the caffeine.
You cut the caffeine. Well, there you go. Get your trampoline, cut the caffeine. Let me know. How much better you want to do, by the way, guy? You got a billboard on Sunset Boulevard.
I gotta send you a video, and I'm going to send it to you because I was going to post it up on Instagram, but I felt like it was a little harsh. It was a video I took while watching that. I'm going to send it to you. You got to tell me whether or not I should post it or not. But it's deeper into the documentary. It's not like I'm going to ruin it for you or anything like that. But I got to send it to you. You got to watch it. We'll discuss it on the cast next week.
Oh, I tell you, I think you're going with that. And I know we'll let it go here. But the next show you do, that should be one of the angles, as everyone knows, by the end of the sitcom, at some point, maybe up front, maybe in the open, maybe in the tag, maybe in the middle, Sebastian will cry. It's like you're a little different strokes. What you talking about, Wilson?
Willis.
It's been a long time. Good hang, brother.
We got, what do you got? You got any shows coming up here?
Yeah, we got some definites. Well, of course, we got the premiere of the sitcom Kevin Can Wait Monday. I had nothing to do with the pilot. It's very good. It's very good. I just came aboard after that was done. But I'm headlining Gotham Comedy Club October 8th, October 9th. Stress Factory in New Jersey, New Brunswick, the weekend of Thanksgiving, Friday and Saturday. And then there's some other ones I know out in California, Irvine, but go to PeteCorielli.com. They're all listed. And thanks again for listening to our show, man. It means everything. What do you got, kid?
What do I got? I got Rochester, November.
Shit, when?
4th.
Damn it, man. I wish I was home. That's like not far from me.
Yeah, right there, November 4th. If you're out in Fredonia, make the ride over to Rochester, New York. I got Baltimore on November 5th, Poughkeepsie on November 18th, and then Syracuse on November 19th. Just a quick note, and I know some people have been trying to get tickets for the Atlantic City shows in January. Those are on sale to the public today at the Brigada, January 13th and 14th. And also tickets are on sale for Chicago, going a little backwards here, November 25th and 26th. So that's what's happening. Good hanging. Go write some killer stuff, and we will reconvene here back on the Pete and Sebastian Show next week.
All right. Great hanging, brother. Later.
Right. Take care.
The show has ended.
Wait, I gotta...
It's a molestation test, bro. I gotta spell it out.
Yeah.